KHOI, Joy City, and Ames.
Welcome to Local Talk Tuesday, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events of our Central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with Milford Township neighbor Pat Schlerbaum and KHOI's engineer and station manager Mike Murphy.
Our day starts out with mostly sunny skies, reaching a more seasonal high of 55 degrees. Winds will be out of the north-northwest at 10 to 20 miles per hour. During the evening hours, we can expect more clouds with diminishing winds and the low temperature in the mid to upper 30s. It's a new moon greeted us at 5:48 this morning. Sunrise at 7:38 and sunset is 6:18 p.m. this evening. Currently, it is 35 degrees. And the Story County Community Foundation is looking forward to having you join them at a ribbon cutting and open house today, Tuesday, October 25th at 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. And that's at 515 Grand Avenue, Suite 202. And that's with the Story County Community Foundation.
And we're going to welcome this bright early morning, Aja Lyons with Iowa State University, the ISU English Department student steward, caring for the Everett Casey Natural Habitat property. Good morning, Aja.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Seriously, a bright smile today. It's, you know, after yesterday's little soaker, we need some sunshine. So thanks for joining us.
Oh my goodness, I'm always happy to be on KHOI. Love y'all. And I'm so happy to talk about Casey. It really is such a fantastic property. And we're so fortunate. People are surprised to think that, you know, the English department, you know, this nature reserve, but Everett Casey was a graduate, an engineering graduate back in 1946. He donated the land to the English department and specifically wanted it to go to the Masters of Fine Arts program in creative writing environment. He was an engineering student who took an English class, and he's at Iowa State, and so loved us and so loved the English class that he took. And so it belongs to the entire English department, and we all go out there to take a rest and reprieve and write and get inspired, because there's so much to be inspired by. It's 76 acres of Iowa wilderness, and Bluff Creek, a tributary of the Des Moines River, runs right through it at this beautiful sort of twisted slope. And I am hosting a hike November 5th at 1 p.m., and I am inviting not just the entire Iowa State community, but the entire Central Iowa community to come out and join me.
Okay, so you say Bluff Creek. Where? How would one, if you were leaving, say, driving from Ames on Highway 30, how would you get there?
Yes, so you would take Highway 30 going west, and you would exit the Adel, the Ogden Adel exit, and I'm going to make sure that I tell you the exact number of that exit, but it is...
is that Highway 169, perhaps?
No. That is... Yes. It is the 126.
126.
Okay. Yes. And then you turn right, so you'd be going north at the stop sign, D Avenue, South First Street. Keep going for about 5 miles. Mm-hmm. Then you turn right, then you'd be going east onto 170th Street. Drive for about a mile. And then the Everett Casey Nature Center and Reserve would be on the right, so it'd be on the south side.
Okay.
And there's little red, like 1990s campground style sign that says Everett Casey Nature Center and Reserve, and it says private property. I believe there's a little sign that says Iowa State University as well. And so this is private property, so you can come out there, since I'm inviting folks, but you really don't want to be there without Iowa State University folks, English department folks. But I am opening it up and welcoming people. Gary is sharing. And
I suppose you'll have a little welcome sign there or somebody maybe to greet as folks are coming in.
Absolutely.
Okay. And what time again is this, Aja?
1 p.m.
1 p.m. And that's on the 5th.
Yes.
Okay. So describe the area a little bit. I know the last time we talked, you were actually doing some work on some of the trails. Tell us a little bit more about what's going on there at the reserve.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. So, well, there is an apiary, a student, an agricultural student, wonderful guy, Zachary. He has about 6 beehives, and they the honey is harvested, and he does sell it. And we've got some great pollinators out there, and there's all this woodlands and wildflowers and nectars from this alfalfa prairie. There's a tenant farmer right in the middle of the property is an alfalfa field, and it's absolutely just stunning. And so you've got the bees that just spread all of this gorgeous plant life. And so in addition to the Bluff Creek, mm-hmm. which provides this gorgeous backdrop, and it really just meanders through. And in the winter, you can see the track marks from the small animals and the big animals. We've got some deer. You see the white-tailed deer pretty much year-round. And you only see the beaver tracks and remnants and such. Haven't seen the raccoons. In the summer, you can really see the mushrooms. We do have some morels out there in the northwest corner.
But you're not telling us where they are.
You got to go hunting. But we do have some shiitakes and golden oysters.
Yeah.
Yes. And, but there's a little mushroom emporium.
Yeah.
But and there's also an intentional prairie.
Okay. So tying that prairie back into that apiary, does the beekeeper, does he have a little label that says it comes from the Everett Casey Reserve, and it part of that funds go to the English department, to you guys, to help defray the cost of, I'm just giving you an idea here of keeping those trails upgraded. There's a thought, just planting a seed.
That would be nice. So the money from the alfalfa tenant farmer does go back to the English department.
Oh, okay.
But the honey does not go back to us. I believe that's all him.
Okay.
He's the state English farmer. But I have been considering, because part of my work, I do get an assistantship. Not that much, but I'm wanting to partner. I recently started partnering with the Natural Resources Ecology and Management program. They've been wonderful supporters. Love, love, love them. Big shout out to Dr. Catherine McMullen, Dr. Richard Schultz, wonderful people in forestry, lovely, lovely individuals, as well as the I'm also wanting to partner with Sustainable Agriculture. There's this field out there as well, and thinking of maybe doing a prescribed burn, getting that down, and seeding, and maybe planting some fruit trees and seeing about that.
It almost sounds like you're going the way of what's referred to as like an edible forest, that kind of thing. Do you have a plan for that? Let me ask you this. Do you have a favorite spot, or does that depend on the season or the time of year when you're out there?
You know, I think there's just something beautiful about all of it. And I will say, because we are the English department, a bunch of us are just shy writers who love to sit and be alone. As much as I, love bringing people out and showing them the beauty of the place, We do like to sit and be alone. And if there are people who want to come out and want to just sit and be alone, they don't want to be in this big group, that's fine too. There are benches out there, and there are little spots to just sit and bathe in the sunlight and be alone. And I will say that sometimes I like to sit in these little spots and be alone.
Okay.
And so one of my favorite spots is the little benches I have out there. There are three benches, and sometimes one of my little bench spots.
Okay. Yeah, it is. It's amazing how I'll bet you just feel recharged once you return back to the big city of Ames, once you've been out there, right?
There's nothing like it.
Sounds like it's your version of your psychiatrist. I know a number of us around here, when we get a chance to get outdoors, I mean, it's been proven that it sure helps the mental health of the individual. You get a whole new outlook on life. And in some cases, you start to assess your position in life. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, especially after being stuck inside and alone after the pandemic lockdown, the effects of which are still ongoing, you know, just because people have gotten vaccinated and are interacting in person and such again, doesn't mean that the effects have gone away. That really is a mental effect that will last the rest of our lifetime. I actually started going out there the summer of 2021, mm-hmm. and I realized that I'd never really spent a significant time alone and understanding what that meant since COVID. And it really helped me heal and understand how to love myself in such a beautiful and healthy way in solitude and in communing with nature in this beautiful way and in the beauty of silence and listening to my own self in a new way that I hadn't before, and finding my own voice and sitting in the quiet and learning when to step out, step back, step in, step out, and choosing when to respond and choosing silence, and how that can be even louder.
Boy, that sounds beautiful. Pat?
Yeah, Asa, this is Pat Schlarbaum. So Everett Casey, was he a member of the faculty in the English department?
No, he was an engineering graduate, and he actually, I believe, worked with some company, but he was not faculty.
I guess we can imagine he achieved a lot of solitude and pleasantness on the property that you've kind of expressed now. I think you've honored his intentions.
I'd like to think so, and I've wrote many a nature poem. And if anyone would like to take a look, there's a website, thecaseyland.engl.iastate.edu. You can learn more about it and see beautiful photos. It's absolutely gorgeous, whether winter, summer, spring, fall. It's just beautiful, and I cannot wait to take folks out there.
Well, Aja, is there? You're going to have to share some of your poetry again, like you have in the past, for our Earth Day celebration in the mm-hmm. spring. So, any last thoughts in the last 30 seconds?
People, get outside. Whether you have to walk slowly, run, wheel, even if it's just for 5 minutes a day, just try and get outside.
And
whether it's way out in Ogden with me, or you just step out on your front porch.
Oh, great words. Take a breathe in deep through your nose and out through your mouth, and just breathe in nature and everything it has to offer to heal your, not only your physical self, but your inner soul. And it sounds like you are helping spread that word, Aja. Thanks for your message. Thanks for sharing. And we want you back.
I will definitely be back. Thanks for having me. Y'all have a good one.
Thank you.
be rivers so bright. I was born in a hut made of husks of the tall yellow corn. And there I first spied my Julia so true, and I rode her about in my gum tree canoe. Sing, roll away, roll o'er the waters so blue, like a feather will float in our gum tree canoe. Sing, roll away, roll o'er the waters so blue, like a feather will float in our gum tree canoe. A soft cotton I'd hoe, and I'd think of my Julia and sing as I go. Then I'd catch her a bird with a wing of true blue, and at night sail around in my gum tree canoe. Sing and roll away, roll o'er the waters so blue, like a feather will float in our gum tree canoe. Sing and roll away, roll o'er the waters so blue, like a feather will float in our gum tree canoe.
And if you're just tuning in, that was John Hartford, Gumtree Canoe. It's 17 minutes after the hour, and I'm here sitting in for Mike Metz, myself, today, as opposed to last week. Thank you for joining us. I've been joined with Pat Schlierbaum and Mike Murphy. And Pat, it's that time of year where we honor an individual here in Story in the central portion of the state. Some of the conservation efforts they've done. Mm-hmm. And one way to honor those folks is to recognize them through the Olaf Smedahl Conservation Award.
Yeah, Olaf Smedahl, a journalist for the Ames Tribune and quite a conservation writer in his own right of an earlier era, but yet his conservation work continues and people are recognized and each year. And it's it really is a humbling and wonderful award.
Well, when Ole was alive and they started the award, his comment to his son, whom we've had on air, Karsten Smedahl, was, well, we'll be lucky if we get five or six folks and we'll just run out of folks to honor. Well, we're approaching the 35th year of honoring folks. So let's have a listen. I had a visit with Steve Lekwa.
This is Mike Metz with KHOI-FM. I recently had an opportunity to visit with Steve Lekwa, the past director of the Story County Conservation Board, well known to many as the writer of the outdoor column, Naturally Speaking. Before we talk to Steve for the Olaf Smedahl Conservation Award, let me start out by describing a bit about the award and the nomination process. The Ames chapter of the Isaac Walton League and the Story County Conservation Board are seeking nominees for the Olaf Smedahl Conservation Award. The award was initiated in 1988 by the Daily Tribune to honor Olaf Smedahl, who spent 22 years as the outdoor writer and 17 years as the outdoor editor for the paper. This award seeks to honor those who by their actions or communications have done the most to accurately present to the public of mid-Iowa excellence in the conservation of the natural resources. This would include the air, water, woods, wildlife, and soil, and outdoor pursuits representing the highest standards of ethics and sportsmanship. Preference will be given to individuals who exhibit excellence in providing public information, leadership, and or involvement. Those who are making the nominations should send a letter indicating the nominee's background, a description of a successful program, the project or the event for which the nominee was responsible, some of the measurable results that were achieved, and the impact of the program or project or event on the general public of mid-Iowa. It's encouraged that additional letters of support from individuals or conservation-oriented groups be included with the initial nomination. Steve, it's that time of year when we start asking the public to submit nominations for the Olaf Smedahl Conservation Award. What's your take on that award? What is your experience?
Of course, Olaf Smedahl was a friend and a mentor for me many years ago when I was relatively early in writing my Naturally Speaking column. He was quite a guy. I really enjoyed knowing him and his wife. Both were neat people. She was actually the one that did most of the editing for my writing. Ole just put it in the paper.
Okay, so it was originally the outdoor page that you would submit the Naturally Speaking column for.
Yep. Yeah, I had started writing in the Story City Herald, but Ole had grown up in Roland and knew of the Herald and contacted me and wondered if I would submit my stuff to the Ames Trib through him. So double-spaced on type pages and plenty of margin so that she could do her edits and write in or change things that I messed up. But as far as the award goes, after Ole passed, he really was, in a way, a pioneer. No one had done an outdoor awareness thing before Ole.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly there were people interested in it, but every week he had stuff in there about the outdoors. And it wasn't just hook and bullet stuff. It was all kinds of outdoors, and he was a charter member of the Isaac Walt League.
Right.
So recognizing people, local people, who have promoted and contributed to conservation and outdoor recreation here in Story County was a worthy way of honoring Ole's work. And I've been amazed through the years that we have never run out of people worth mentioning, worth noting, worth recognizing.
Steve, before we go on, let me share a little bit more about the general information about the recipients of the award. The award is presented annually to honor those who by their actions or communications have done the most to accurately present to the public of Mid-Iowa excellence in the conservation of our natural resources and outdoor pursuits. And these are representing the highest standards of ethics and sportsmanship. Olaf was able to participate in some of these presentations until his death on November 27th, 1993, at the age of 88. And then, for several years after the initiation of the award by the Daily Tribune, the Ames chapter of the Isaac Walt League and Story County Conservation Board assumed the sponsorship of the award. This seemed appropriate as Olaf was a founding father and charter member of the local Isaac Walton League and a strong supporter of Story County Conservation. The selection committee is comprised of members from the Ames chapter of the Isaac Walton League and Story County Conservation Board. A permanent plaque with name plates recognizing all past award winners is on display at the Story County Conservation Center at the McFarland Park north of Ames. And each of the recipients receives a beautiful, full-sized, personalized plaque. Steve, you when you mention Ole and his outdoor page, that makes me think of a couple of other individuals that were outdoor writers. Bill Horine comes to mind.
By all means, yes. Another charter member of the Ikes.
Yeah, and he actually he received the award
early. A charter member of the Story County Conservation Board.
Yeah.
Bill was another good friend. They lived just across 11th Street from me here in the latter years.
Sure. Bill and Mary.
Yeah.
And then Ed Rude, of course, was also another writer, photographer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's folks like that shared their experiences and observations of the outdoors with folks. Having a conservation award that originally... It was the Tribune and the Isaac Walton League that sponsored that award. Now it's the Story County Conservation Board, and the Isaac Walton League is still involved, and the selection committee is composed of members of each of those two groups. So, while in fact, you were awarded the recognition. Do you remember what year that was?
No, I don't. I think I'm relatively early in it compared to now, odd years
later. I should have looked it up and gave you the year. Yeah, and then you could have said
probably back in the...
I think
how many years have we been doing this now?
It's been over 30.
Over 30, so yep. I guess I'm in the first 10 somewhere.
Yeah.
There have been an awful lot of folks, you know, and it's not just individuals that have been recognized through the years. There have been some couples recognized, and I'm not so sure, but has there been an organization or two even?
There have been organizations that have been nominated, and we do take those nominations for the committee. But
to this point, being a person.
It's usually a person or, like you say, a couple. The way it's written, it could be somebody who's in the profession, the outdoor profession, as a career, but they go above and beyond their normal hours. Mm-hmm. It's what they do in addition to that that helps qualify them. So, yeah.
Yeah, we've had educators, we've had people who served on boards, people who have led in various types of conservation activities.
Folks that have just taken a project on their own, private citizens, citizen scientists, folks like that.
Yeah.
So, well, thanks, Steve, for sharing a moment with us on that. And Todd Burris is, he usually does public relations, and I know in the past you've mentioned it in your columns, so mm-hmm. This is our way to get the word out.
Right, and it's going to be a little more difficult with Todd not doing the outdoor page anymore.
Yeah.
Hardly a week goes by that somebody doesn't say, well, what happened to the outdoor page? What happened to the column, this or that?
Yeah.
And it's just gone.
And that's... So that's what our mission is with KHOI, is to keep that going. We want to do that. Steve, I want to thank you for sharing your memories and contributing to the selection of various nominations throughout the year. You know, Steve, we should share just a little bit more about Ole. After 39 years of association with the Daily Trib, 22 years as outdoor writer and columnist, and 17 additional as outdoor editor, Olaf Smedahl retired on January 28, 1988. And during these years, Ole brought his lifelong interest in the outdoors and conservation of our natural resources to the citizens of mid-Iowa through the pages of the Daily Tribune. Smedahl has given publicity to the purposes and goals of many associations and organizations throughout the years that include groups like the Isaac Walton League of America, the Sierra Club, the Audubon Society, the Wildlife Federation, Pheasants Forever, Ducks Unlimited, the Department of Interior Fish and Wildlife Service, the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, the Tourism Division of the Iowa Development Commission, and Story County Conservation Board, along with many others. This award is presented to a person or persons annually to honor Olaf Smedahl, the man who, through the Daily Tribune's long-running outdoor page, kept thousands of people in touch with the outdoors and brought to mid-Iowa an awareness of the need to conserve our natural resources. The deadline for nominations is October 31st, and these nomination materials can be submitted to the Olaf Smedahl Conservation Award Committee, Michael Metz Chair, in care of Story County Conservation, McFarland Park, at 56461 180th Street, Ames, Iowa, 50010. We've been visiting with Steve Lekwa about the Olaf Smedahl Conservation Award. This is Mike Metz with KHOI FM, Story City, Ames.
I'd like to thank Steve Lekwa again for discussing that award with me. And again, we like to see a post date, the October 31st, but if it comes in within that next week, those nominations will be accepted at Story County Conservation in care of Mike Metz, since I'm the current chair of that committee. And Pat, you've been a recipient and, gosh, well-deserved. Thanks for all you do for conservation. I know that's kind of one of your go-to phrases for folks, but really, you're really one of those individuals that exemplifies what goes on with that award.
Well, thanks for those kind words. But it's really what Olaf Speedall can inspire in all of us, you know, as a great conservationist here in Storey County and around the state. And when everybody picks up a little bit of conservation because of his influence, that's all the better.
Yeah.
It's quite a, it needs to be like ripples in the water, you know, that just spread out from Olaf. And what a guy and what an award.
Yeah.
Thanks for all your efforts in those areas, Mike Metz.
Well said, Pat.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
And you don't have to be alone if you go downtown Ames and bump into Susan Gwiazda like we're doing this morning. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Yeah. Well, we had a nice, gentle rain yesterday. Looks like we're going to have some sunshine. Do you have some events to highlight before we visit with your guest today?
Well, my events are mostly indoors, so the weather is not as important for those. But we do have a council meeting tonight. Starts at 6 p.m. It is the last regularly scheduled council meeting of October. As always, you can get information on our website, what items will be covered. Tonight, some highlights include the Link Project, which is the development along Lincoln Way between Clark and Kellogg. Also, the study of the Grand Avenue intersections between 9th Street and 24th Street. There's a report on the study of those intersections that will be discussed tonight at the council meeting, so you can read that report. Again, all those council action items are available on our website at cityofames.org/ccmeetings. And you can get the same information that the city council receives and read the reports yourself and then follow along. If you can't attend the council meeting, you can always watch it on YouTube or Facebook or live streaming off of our website, cityofames.org.
Very good.
Some other meetings coming up. Just 1 week later is the town budget meeting. That's the kickoff to the budget process, Tuesday, November 1st at 6 p.m. And then a couple of outside events. We have No Charge Yard Waste Day coming up this Saturday, the first one of the series of four. You can get more details on the next date on our website, along with a voucher or how to get the voucher if you can't make one of the days in November. And then finally, trick-or-treating. I know a lot of people are asking about that. Mm-hmm. What is the official night in Ames for trick-or-treat? It is Monday, October 31st from 5:30 to 7:30. And we wish everybody a safe and happy and scary Halloween.
Yeah. Well, scary in a fun way, though.
Absolutely.
And speaking of scary in a fun way, let's introduce Keith Abraham. Good morning, Keith.
Well, that's an interesting introduction. I'm not sure if I would have done that one.
Yeah, you might want to clarify some of that for me, Mike.
I would say busy in a good way.
Yeah. Keith, you've got a...
How are you doing?
Oh, we're doing well here. I know, a little, acting a little smart, but I think you can take it. You have
broad shoulders, Mike.
You have some updates to share with us on some of the goings on. You know, I know there's this change of season, but gosh, you must be just as busy this time of year as other times of year.
You know, you're exactly right, Mike. At this time of year, and I always thought, you know, when I first got into this profession that there were some downtimes, you know, some little lulls here and there, but there really isn't. You know, getting into the winter, we're winterizing, you know, all of our drinking fountains and restrooms and trying to get whatever we can get done before things freeze and the snow flies and all that kind of stuff. And we said transitioning a lot of our outdoor staff, parks staff, start transitioning and doing more tree work, trimming and removing of trees and things that we kind of save for this time of the year. But recreationally wise, you know, we've got a lot of programs continuing to happen. All of our basketball is starting to come up. And so we have a lot of things going on, Mike.
You know, I just before we cover some of those maybe areas of interest, I need to bring this out, and that that new property that you're looking at there on West Ames for park development, you recently received a grant from the REAP program, and congratulations. That's not the easiest thing to do.
Yeah, thanks, Mike, and I know you were very helpful. With I know you chair the Story County REAP committee and gave us some valuable feedback before we submitted that grant. But we did receive a grant from REAP, which is Resource Enhancement and Protection. It's offered by the Iowa DNR, but $200,000, and which is the maximum amount that we could get for a large community. And even one of the neat things with it is there were over 30 applications between the three categories, small, medium, and large communities, and our application scored the highest out of those 30 plus applications. So really want to thank Susan, Joshua Thompson, Lisa Hine with the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation for getting that submitted. So yeah, so it was a fun day when we get that news.
Yeah, and so our listeners realize there are city-sized categories, so it's not like you're going up against, say, Gilbert or Roland Story. You fall in a different category, but congratulations.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Now, could you share your thoughts a little? I think you had some upcoming meetings with the public, or?
Yeah, we do. So I think I'll preface it. Is that we continually, as a department in a city, try to do what we can to make all of our parks and activities accessible and enjoyable for everyone, no matter what your ability is. And a couple of recent examples, obviously the Miracle Park inclusive playground and the Miracle League field that we have up at Inez Grove. More recently, the accessible kayak launch up at Ada Hayden. So we continue to try to do things and address the needs within the park system. One thing that we didn't have a good handle on is what do we really all need to do within the park system as it relates to the Americans with Disabilities Act. So we did contract with the WT Group out of Chicago, and they came in this past summer and did an audit of all of our parks and facilities with parks and recreation, every element. And what they're doing is they're putting together a transition plan, which the transition plan will show us where we are not compliant, what we need to do, estimated costs for bringing things into compliance. But part of the requirement through the ADA and with Title II is to have public engagement. So we are partnering with Mainstream Living. They're serving as an advocate with us and have been really working with other agencies to get them aware of these meetings that we're having, which are going to happen tomorrow and Thursday. So they'll be at the library auditorium, Ames Public Library, and we will have them at 2 p.m. tomorrow, 6 p.m. tomorrow, and 10 a.m. on Thursday morning. So three opportunities for people to get involved and share their comments. And then the 6 o'clock meeting on Wednesday, it will be a hybrid meeting, so you can Zoom in or attend in person. Okay. Tomorrow afternoon and Thursday morning, those are in-person meetings. All three of them are in-person. But we will also have a sign language interpreter on site as well for anybody that needs some assistance. in if they're hearing impaired. So that's kind of an overview, Mike, of what's happening with that. So questions?
Well, it's really come. Park systems have come a long way, I think, in the last couple of decades. An example would be, and this would be a county park example, would be out at McFarland. They had at one point what we called the Touch of Life Trail, where folks who couldn't maybe, they had visual impaired, that kind of thing. They were able to feel tracks. There was some tactile things, and it was a surfaced area. And we've gone from that one little site countywide. And I know that Ames Parks and Rec have surfaced areas, like you've mentioned, a handicap or a launch for boats for folks who have trouble with that. The Miracle Park. I mean, you've made such big strides in that I would just kudos to the folks that are putting and thinking about that. We all want to get out and enjoy. Like we said earlier in the program, mental and physical health are important, and nature is part of that.
Yeah, very, very much so. And just with all of the different things that that people deal with day in and day out, and I always, and we as a department, as a city, encourage everybody to get out into the park system, because there are so many benefits. Just to clear the mind, emotionally, mentally, physically, there's a lot of benefits. And as we do have, and yet, within the park system, and you maybe alluded to it a little bit, Mike, is that, we do have hard surface trails for people to go on. And if you have mobility issues, it makes it easier for you. But yet, then we do have, for people who want it, we have more of the natural type of trails, East River Valley, Munn Woods. And one of the things, John McGovern, who's going to be presenting tomorrow, he's with the WT Group. He's very knowledgeable on this topic. ADA has had three committees, thus far to look at this from a national level. And he's the only individual that has been on all three committees. So he's very knowledgeable about the topic. But he will also, say that, everything doesn't need to be done right now to make it accessible. But as we have been making changes, we've been building new parks, then we do need to make sure that everything's accessible. So, yeah. And I would say too, is we always want to hear from people. If people have questions, concerns, give us a call. Yeah. And let's talk about it.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention also your partnership with the Friends Ada Hayden, where we offer some time where we can get folks out who can't get around that park, the ability through the use of golf carts for a day to get out and see that park and listen to the story and the stones and that kind of thing. And thanks for working with the folks on that.
Yeah. In the Friends group, and we have multiple Friends groups, but with Ada Hayden, that Friends group, the leadership that they provide for management of the park, but then also doing things like you described, giving people an opportunity that have never been able to get out there and walk and have mobility issues. It's a great thing. We get a lot of positive comments in regards to that. So we are very thankful for everybody that helps us deliver the services and facilities that we have to everybody. So it's a real positive. It's a great community to be in because there is so much support.
Boy, I'd like to point out, Keith, this is Pat Schlarp. Back in the 80s, I remember going to city parks in Des Moines and around the state. And there was a term that I picked up on, that all the trees were lollipop trees. They had all been trimmed and everything was kind of for the people easy accessibility, a lot of playground items were installed. But then since that time, there seems to be a shift where you're focusing more on habitat, and Ada Hayden being a really wonderful example of the prairie that you've planted out there. And it's even attracted river otters. Back in the 1980s, that had been unforeseen. But I really want to compliment you on all your habitat enhancement, that you kind of work with nature in the parks, and it makes for just a really wonderful park experience for the people of Ames.
Thank you for those comments, Pat, and you're spot on with those. Is there's, you know, more and more desire from people, that natural experience. How do we provide that? And I know sometimes, you know, we get questions that, well, you're taking this tree down, or you're doing this, or why don't you just leave it and not put in prairie? You know, we get a lot of questions, but by doing some of those native types of plantings and bringing in native species, we really increase the habitat and increase the amount of wildlife that we get in these areas as well. So yeah, it's a real positive. So thank you for those comments.
Well, Keith Abraham, thank you for joining us today. We'll meet you out there on the trail.
All right. And like I always say, if you're listening, take some time, get outside, enjoy what we have to offer. The parks are yours. Get out and enjoy them.
Thank you, Keith.
Thank you so much, Mike.
We're joined now by Deidre DeGier, candidate for the governor of Iowa. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
We're doing well. Thank you for joining us this morning. Now, we'll start right off with, you've got some experience politically, but could you share with our listeners how it is that you decided to run for the office of governor?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I started as a young Drake student in Des Moines, and I had the fortunate opportunity to be surrounded by a community that was really invested in us as students. I was able to start a small business in undergrad. I was able to start a nonprofit in undergrad, and all doing this work while going to class and, you know, working multiple jobs to stay in school and to ensure that I could afford it. And when I think about that pathway and how that pathway has led me to today, it is an complete and total investment in my community. I feel very, very strongly about paying it forward, and I believe so deeply in our state because I believe in our people. And, you know, over the last couple of years, we've seen a lot of challenges that Iowans have yet to overcome arise, and I feel very, very strongly about the fact that we can overcome these challenges collectively because our state is a petri dish of progress. We've always been able to move forward, and when we see backwards trajectories, that should be a signal to us to interrupt that cycle and to do as we've always done, which is to focus on the individual and to move the individual forward, because when we do that, then our state moves forward collectively.
Well said. You speak about the individual. What are, say, your top three priorities if you are elected? What are those three things that you really think we should concentrate on?
Well, I've got four.
Okay.
And the reason why I have four is because when I started this exploratory to run for governor, I wanted to be sure about what it was that Iowans wanted to see in their communities and what good they saw in their communities as well. And so in having many, many, many conversations, hundreds, what I've come is to find is that there's an agenda out there, and we call it the real agenda. And this agenda is based upon the concerns that Iowans have talked with me about along this trail. And I haven't been proven wrong yet. Mind you, there are other issues that are important to Iowans that aren't a part of this real agenda, but this is the core. And it starts with rural revitalization. We all benefit when our rural communities are thriving throughout the state. And we've seen under both Republican and Democratic leadership that we truly haven't been able to show up for our rural communities as best as we could. And we see the damage being caused right before our eyes. And, you know, Iowans are hardworking people. But in our rural communities, we see time and time again, folks are working way too hard. So we want to revitalize our rural communities and invest in them in such a way that they're set up for success. The other thing, E, education and child care. These are things that we hear Iowans talk about everywhere that we go. The lack of access, the lack of affordability, and the lack of funding that exists in our education system. This is a state that was once number one in education, and now we're 18, 19, 20 on the list, depending upon the list that you look at. And we know as Iowans, that's not where we belong, but it's not enough to just say we're number one. That ranking meant that we were able to produce some of the best and brightest students that this world will ever see. They were able to compete not only with their peers, but against any other student in the world. And we want to equip Iowa students to be able to do that. A stands for accessible and affordable health care and mental health care. You know, in rural Iowa, people are telling me they got to drive 45, 60 miles to get care. In urban Iowa, they live right next door to the hospital and can't get the care that they need. We're having a challenge right now where insured people are being turned away. And if insured people are being turned away from healthcare and mental health care services, we can only imagine what the most vulnerable is experiencing. And then lastly is labor force empowerment. We've got to empower our labor all over the state and ensure that Iowans are equipped to have economic sustainability in their lives. You know, I live in Polk County, and in Polk County, we can brag about the fact that we can live, work, and play in our community, the fact that we can buy a home in our community, wake up and go to work in our community, come home and visit a small business or send our kids to a dance studio or something of that nature, where that should be accessible in all 99 counties across the state. But it's going to come with a strong economic development plan that each and every county in the state can tap into.
Well, just listening to those points and the point you made about the rural vitalization, it seems like some of the smaller communities are what would be considered bedroom communities, where those folks live, have a house there, but then they end up having to work elsewhere. So is that something that you're trying to strive for?
Yeah, you know, and we see those bedroom communities a great deal in our river towns and along the northern border, where Iowans will live in the state of Iowa, but their work on the other side of the river, or their work just north of our border. And we want to give Iowans an opportunity to not only live in their communities, but work in their communities as well. But a large part of that is that we are short 50,000 workforce units in the state today. And so that housing stock has to rise if we're going to meet the demand of the labor force, so people are more equipped to live in the communities where they work.
Okay. I'm going to just, you know, we've got some questions that we ask all of our candidates, but I'm going to just go off topic just a little bit, and I'm interested in your views on the use of eminent domain and mm-hmm. private property rights. Could you share with our listeners your views on that?
You know, my great grandmother was a sharecropper in the state of Mississippi, and my grandmother was one of the first off the farm and was able to get a college education. But she had to pick cotton growing up as a kid. My husband's family, they're cattle ranchers. And, you know, I've learned a great deal about the land in my family. But one thing I was taught is that you leave this land better than the way you found it. And our farmers are revered in our state, not only in our state, but across this world. And the idea that a private entity can come in and tell our farmers what to do with their land, I think is not right, because we've been there before. We've been there before as a country, and we should know better. The idea of eminent domain should be used in the case of public good. And any entity that wants to claim public good has to show us what that looks like. And so I'm a firm belief we can't come in and tell anybody what to do with their land, because the other part about it is that, you know, these are individuals that have put their blood, sweat, and tears into their land. They're providing for their families, and they're adding value to our communities. And we have to show them that value by standing up for them and creating pathways for success. And that means not allowing anybody to come and infiltrate their land without good cause.
Very good. You mentioned
their decision. It is their decision. I want to be very, very clear about that. It's their decision.
So, you know, when you talk about their decision, gosh, that just segues right into personal health. What are your issues concerning the health between for women and, well, for people in general?
Health is, so I speak a lot about the idea that every Iowan, every American should have access to life, liberty, and happiness. And along that pathway, they should be healthy and whole from the crown of their heads to the sole of their feet. And as I mentioned earlier, insured people are being turned away from healthcare services. You know, we have many elderly Iowans that are one procedure away from bankruptcy. Folks are afraid to retire on the account that their health insurance may not keep them alive. We're seeing lack of access to routine reproductive health care in this state as a result of the current governor's crusade against choice. No, it's one thing to stand against abortion, which is her belief, but her crusade against abortion care is not just limited access to abortions that women need in this state and throughout this country, but it's the access to the routine reproductive health care. There are mamas in more than 80 counties in our state who can't go to an OBGYN doctor in their county. I spoke with a mother last year in February because I did a great deal of maternal health work in order to help increase access to maternal health services in light of the fact that our governor was causing a reduction in access. And I spoke with a mother in a focus group who was 5 months pregnant and had yet to go see an OBGYN. And this was an insured mother. And it wasn't because of lack of trying. It was because the access wasn't available for her to go. And so we have to do a stronger job of ensuring that Iowans have access to be healthy. But that also it's not just about the healthcare system as a whole, because we have to refine that system, but we've got to get more people working in it. And that's why education is so key in this. It's about educating our students, but it's about ensuring they are equipped to fill the jobs that they want to fill. As I'm talking to young people, they want to be teachers. They want to be nurses. They want to go into childcare. I'm hearing young people talk about this. So let's equip them while they're in the 9th through 12th experience so that their transition, if they need post-secondary, their transition out of high school is equipping them to get into a job or to get into post-secondary. We had schools that opened this school year that didn't have math teachers, that didn't have science teachers. That's not equipping our students for a future that they can lean on to. That's not equipping them to compete. And so while we have to resolve the issues with our healthcare system, we don't do it unless we get more people into the field.
Well, thank you for your words, thank you for your willingness to run for this position of governor of the state of Iowa. I want to wish you luck and tell everybody out there to go vote. That you're listening.
Yeah, voting is happening right now. It's happening live and in color. And I want folks to know that, you know, this race is not about the D or the R behind our name. This race is about the I behind our name, and it stands for Iowans. And I'm going to be a governor that lifts all Iowans up. We no longer have to settle for policies that only impact a select few of people. I'm going to go the distance for Iowans and make sure that policies are positively impacting folks, whether they're in rural, urban, or suburban areas. Because that's the type of leadership that we need in this fight for democracy and in this fight for freedom.
Okay, thank you. That's Deirdre DeGere, Democrat candidate for governor. Thank you for joining us, and good luck.
Thank you.
KHOI provides a platform for citizen and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI, your community nonprofit, nonpartisan media. Remember, you can also hear this broadcast online at khoifm.org, and you can find links to our guests and the information you heard during this program. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thanks, Pat Schlierbaum, for sitting by my side, and for Mike Murphy running the controls, and Lynn Carey for her production prowess. Thank you, folks, for listening. See you again on the radio.
All right. Story City, Ames, and surrounding areas. This is KHOI, Story City, Ames.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The Democrats' principal failure.